Greetings and welcome back to OU.org and www.etshalom.com as we continue our study of the book of Shmuel. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom and we are now on the 10th chapter of the first book of Samuel, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yod. And we will be picking up really in the middle of a story. As we ended Perek Tet, we ended the 9th chapter with Shmuel the prophet and Shaul the soon-to-be first king, perhaps, standing alone on the way down out of the town of Ramah, and Shmuel had promised that he would tell Shaul the words of God that God had commanded in his regard. Vayikach Shmuel et pach ha-shemen. So the first thing Shmuel did is he took a vial of oil, vayitzok al rosho, and he rubbed it or anointed it on Shaul's head. This is an act of anointment or mishicha. Vayishakehu. He then kissed him. Vayomer halo kimishachacha adonai al nachlato lenagid. And then he said to him, declaring what had happened, has God not anointed you over his inheritance, over his people, as a leader? Again, the word melech is not used, but he is indeed anointed, as is the protocol for a king. Let us see how this then plays out. Shmuel, over the course of the next five verses, presents Shaul with three signs that he's going to encounter or that are going to occur to him on his way from Ramah down to Giv'ah, down to the town of Giv'ah, which is his hometown, otherwise known as Givat Binyamin, infamous from the story of Pilegash B'Giv'ah, also known as Giv'at Shaul, and that will be a name given later, and in our case, it will be given a third name. B'lechtecha yom me'imadi, as you leave me today, u'matzata shnei anashim im kvurat Rachel b'l'gvul b'nyamin b'tzeltzach. You will find two men at the burial place of Rachel, which is in Binyamin's territory in a place called Tzeltzach. Now, this has profound implications for some geographic issues, because if we read in Bereshit Lamed Hei and in Bereshit Mem Chet, when Yaakov, when Rachel dies, and then later on in Yaakov's deathbed, when he recalls this tragic event, we are told that Rachel died on the road to Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem, we assume, and not necessarily the case, but we assume, is Beit Lechem of Yehuda, the famous Bethlehem. And as such, the gravesite of Rachel has always been associated since the beginning of the Common Era with a location just outside of the town of Beit Lechem. However, from this verse, it seems quite clear that Kever Rachel, that Rachel is buried, and that her burial place is some sort of a monument, a place that people go to, that is north of Yerushalayim, because after all, they are in Ramat Ephraim, and he is going to go directly south on the mountain road to the town of Giv'ah, which itself is also north of Yerushalayim, and it is all within the territory of Binyamin. The interested reader is directed to a chapter in my book about the location of Kever Rachel, between the lines of the Bible, and you could see all of the different approaches presented there. In any case, you are going to meet two men at Kever Rachel. Then what are they going to tell you? They're going to tell you that the donkeys that you went to seek out have been found. And your father has already given up on the donkeys or forgotten about the donkeys, and he has said, well, I'm worried about my son. What am I going to do for my son? Now, the implication of the text is that these two men are not necessarily prophets or angels. They're regular people who may have encountered Kish and know that Kish has already given up on the donkeys. In the meantime, the donkey has been found somewhere else. That's the sense. And then in the meantime, Kish is worried, as Shaul thought he may be, about Shaul. In any case, that's the first thing that's going to happen to you. Second, v'chalaftami sham, you'll continue walking from there. V'hala, and you're going to mean, in this case, south. Uvatar Elon Tavor, you're going to come to a, what at the time was evidently a famous tree, Elon Tavor. Umetza'ucha sham shlosha anashim. Whether Chaucer's Tabor Inn may be related to this is something for the Chaucerian scholars to look into. And if anybody knows, please feel free to email me. I'd love to hear about it. Uvata ad Elon Tavor umetza'ucha sham shlosha anashim olim el ha'elohim betel. And you're going to find three people going up to God at Beit El. Beit El, which is not as far south as Ramah, but is a worship site. It was a worship site evidently since after Yaakov's time, but certainly now that Shiloh is not up, people are going to Beit El to worship God. There's three people now, not two, now three people going up to Beit El. Echad noseh shlosha gedayim, three of them will be carrying three kids. Echad noseh shlosha kikrot lechem, one will be carrying three loaves of bread. Echad noseh nevel yayin, and one will be carrying a flask of wine. These are all offerings. This should remind us of the offering that Chana brought at the end of the first chapter, substituting the kids with cows. V'sha'alu lecha l'shalom, they will greet you. And they'll give you two of the breads. And you take it from them. That's the second sign. You will come to Givat HaElohim. This is his hometown, but instead of Givat Binyamin, or just Givah, or Givat Shaul, which it'll later be called, it's called Givat HaElohim, the mountain of God. Asher Sham Nitzivei Flishtim. We don't know why it's called the mountain of God, but we will find out in a moment. And it's a place where there are nitzivei plishtim. A nitziv is a garrison, which means that the plishtim, who had control over the country, which is why everybody wants a king to get rid of them, have a garrison, a sort of military outpost in this place, Givah, and we will learn more about that in Perek Yod Dalad, in the war against the plishtim. V'hi chevoacha sham ha'ir, and when you get to the city, ufagata chevel nevi'im, you will meet a band of prophets. We have to talk about what prophets are. And notice here, they're not called ro'im. Yordim mehabama, they'll be coming down from the bama, meaning Givah also had a bama. V'lifnehem, and in front of them, there'll be nevel v'tof v'chalil v'chinor, and nevel is a lyre, and usually it's a nevel asor, which means a 10-string lyre. Tof here is probably a timbrel, some sort of a percussion instrument. Chalil is some sort of a wind instrument, and a kinor is a harp. V'hema mitnabim, and they will be having prophecy. It's important to note that when we speak of prophecy, we regard prophecy as being message directed. The job of a Navi is to get a message from God and then to pass it on further. But we have to recognize that both in Sefer Shmuel and Sefer Malachim, there are records of bands of people who would prophesize in the sense of having a rapture experience, of having the Spirit of God come on them, and they would be involved in something like a trance. We'll read about a very famous story about that at the end of Perek Yotet. In any case, this is a band of prophets, and the prophecy is induced with the music. This is something we read about later in Malachim Bet in the story of Elisha. That Elisha needs prophecy, he has the player come and play some music to induce this prophecy. And you're going to meet these prophets coming down, and v'tzalcha alecha ruach Adonai. Tzalcha, which people generally think means from the modern Hebrew, hatzliach, to be successful, in Tanakh actually means for something to happen very quickly, and it's always positive. Tzalcha alecha ruach Adonai, the Spirit of God will come on you very quickly, v'itnabitamram, you're going to join them as a prophet, v'napachta l'ish acher, and you will then become a different person. V'haya ki tavona ha'otot ha'ela, and when all of these signs come to you, Lach asei lacha asher tinsayadecha. Then you do what you can, keal himach, meaning whatever you're able to do, whatever you'd like to do, meaning as a leader, you're able to do, God is with you. As soon as the signs come to you, you know that for sure. Now, before we go further, we're going to look at the next couple of psukim before taking a little bit of a break. We have to note that these three occurrences are called otot. We are familiar with a synonym for the word otot, which is moftim. Otot u'moftim, signs and wonders. But otot and moftim are really not synonymous. A mofet is a wonder, meaning something that's amazing, that demonstrates that the person who is the facilitator of the act has God behind him, that he's a powerful person, they do something awesome. That's what a mofet is. An ot, on the other hand, is all of that but more. It is instructive. There's something about the sign itself which is symbolic of a message that the sign is meant to portray. And these are called otot, which means we have to look at these different signs of the two people at Kever Rachel telling him that father has forgotten about the donkeys and worries, worried about you, about the three people, and we give him bread and he's supposed to take the bread, and then about joining the prophets. Well, what are they symbolic of? So we'll see that in a moment. In any case, Shmuel then continues and says, V'yaradta lefanai ha-Gilgal. You should then go before me down to Gilgal, and this is the Gilgal of Yoshua, the Gilgal that is near the Yarden, because it's go down. V'nei anochi yored elecha lahalot olot lizbach zivchei shlamim. I'm going to come down after you to bring olot, burnt offerings, and zivchei shlamim, which is peace offerings that will be eaten. In other words, we're going to have a celebration. Shiv'at yomim tochel ad bo'i elecha. Wait for 7 days until I come to you. And then I'll tell you the next step. So in other words, Shmuel says, okay, step one is you're going to go through your route home, and on your route home, you're going to have these three things happen. So when you finally get home, you're going to join the prophets, and you're going to become a different person. After that, go down to Gilgal and wait for me till 7 days, and then we'll have a korban together, and I'll tell you the next step. And what happened? The minute that Shmuel, Shaul, turned his shoulders away, immediately he was seized with a different heart, meaning evidently he was suddenly felt himself higher and more noble and perhaps more spiritual. And now the text, as Ramban points out several times in his commentary on Chumash, the text doesn't repeat all of these signs. It just says all the signs that we heard about, they came on that day. Now, what is the symbolism of the signs? So I want to share the gist of a shiur that I heard several times from one of my teachers, Rav Elchanan Samet, who, as far as understanding the narrative of Tanakh, is just about unsurpassed today. He suggested as follows, that if you think about it, Shaul has gone through what we might refer to as a Cinderella kind of story. Here he was, a loyal son, looking for his father's donkeys, and the next thing you know, he's sitting at the head of the table with the Ro'eh. He is the honored guest. He's getting the finest cut of meat. He's talking privately to the Ro'eh on top of a roof looking down. And the next thing you know, the Ro'eh is anointing him as the Melech Yisrael, as the Nagid Yisrael. Unbelievable. And you might think that after a little while, he'll have to pinch himself and see if is this real? Has the chariot turned back into a pumpkin? So each one of the signs is a replication or a mirror image of a piece of his journey. Why did he go on the journey? To look for donkeys. So what's the first sign? The people are going to tell him the donkey has been found. And by the way, on the journey, Shaul, the reason he wanted to go back and ended up at the foot of Ramah was he said, we better go back because father will give up on the donkeys and be worried about us. And that's exactly what these fellows will tell him, which means he's going to get confirmation of the first leg of his journey, the motivation of his journey. What was the second thing that happened? The solution to the problem of the donkeys was to find the Ro'eh and have the Ro'eh tell him where the donkeys are. But Shaul said, we can't go to the Ro'eh because we have nothing to bring him. And what words did he use? Ki alecha mazal mikelenu, the bread is gone out of our vessels, which means we have nothing to bring him. But he specifically pointed to the bread. And here, these three men, one of them will be carrying bread, and you are to take the bread from them, thus confirming or closing the circle around the tension of the bread. There's the tension of the donkeys, and now the tension of the bread. The third thing that happens is, of course, the end result of all of this, which is he's anointed, he's turned into a different man. So how is that confirmed? Shmuel says to him, when you get back to your home, you're going to be joining the prophets, and you will become a different man, you'll have the Spirit of God on you. And this is confirmation of all of the things that he's experienced. So now all these things happen, but when they get to Giv'ah, here, facing him, coming down towards him, is this band of prophets. And the Spirit of God was seized on him, and he prophesied with them. He joined the rapture. And everybody who knew him from the past, and they saw this, suddenly he's joining the Nevi'im. He was a loyal rancher's son, taking care of the donkeys. So everybody said to each other, what has happened to Ben Kish? Hagam Shaul b'Nevi'im. Is Shaul also among the Nevi'im? Now this phrase is going to be repeated in a very different context than Perek Yutet, but right now it's purely praiseworthy. Surprise, surprise, Shaul is among the Nevi'im. We never thought that he would be so accomplished. And what happens? Vayan ish misham vayomer umi avihem. So one of the men said, and who is the father of these other guys? Right? How can I tell the mashal hagam Shaul b'Nevi'im? And therefore it became a mashal, it became a parable, there's really an aphorism. When you wanted to say that somebody has achieved a success that we never dreamed him capable of, we would say, Hagam Shaul b'Nevi'im. That was the aphorism. And now the text is telling you, you know where it comes from? It comes from this story. And so he ceased this rapturous prophecy, and he came up to Bama, up to the high place, and people were up there. Vayomer Dod Shaul Elav, so his uncle, the father of Avner, evidently, his uncle said to him, Ve'al Na'aro, An Halachtem, where'd you go? It's quite amazing. You were gone for a few days, you come back, and suddenly you're having prophecy. Vayomer Levakesha Atatonot, Venireki Gayin, Vanavoel Shmuel. He said, we were looking for the donkeys, we saw we couldn't find them, we went to Shmuel. So what did Shmuel tell you? He's waiting to hear what happened over all this time. He told us the donkeys were found. That's all he said. He didn't say anything about the kingship. Now, is this because Shaul continues to believe he's not worthy? Is it because he still doesn't believe it's happened? Or is it because he's biding his time and waiting for the most appropriate moment? Unclear. But what becomes very clear through the entire saga of Shaul is that he has a deficiency in which he's unable to embrace the position that God has given him. And that really ends up being his downfall. But right now we see it as a measure of modesty, which we see positively, and Chazal read it that way. And indeed they say that it was Shaul's ability to be discreet about this greatness that he bequeathed to his descendant Esther, as Masechet Megillah and Midrash Esther Rabbah, and that allowed her to be discreet about her identity, which of course ended up with the salvation of the Jews. That this all came from their mother, Rachel, who was able to keep the secret of the fact that Leah was her substitute under the chuppah. So the next thing that happened is Shmuel gathered all the people together. Remember, they had come and asked him for a king. All of this has happened quietly. So now Shmuel called all the people together to Mitzpah, but if the El Hashem either means they're going to do a korban there, or the fact that Navi is calling them, the Aron is not there, and there's no Mishkan there, obviously. So he calls them together in Mitzpah. And remember, they met in Mitzpah back in Perek Zion, so this is a gathering place. Vayomer El Bnei Yisrael. This is what he said. Ko Amar Adonai Elohei Yisrael. Anochi Haleiti Yisrael Mitzrayim. I took you out of Mitzrayim. Vatzilatchem Miad Mitzrayim. I saved you from Egypt. Miad Kol Malchot Alochatzim Etchem. From all the people who oppressed you. This is now referring to Eglon and to the Midianim and all the people in Shoftim who oppressed you. Ve'atem Hayom Ma'astem Et Olechem. And you have rejected your God. In other words, we're about to give you a king, but he's giving them Musar. He's chastising them over the fact that they have requested a king. You have rejected the God that saved you from all of your evils and all your troubles. When you said, no, we want a king. Gather by your tribes and by your alfechem. An elef, which we think of as a thousand, is a subunit underneath a tribe. It may not be a thousand people. It's a subunit. Shivtechem ul alfechem. And he's gathering to get them together, and everybody now knows that they're going to have a king. Now, there's several ways to do it. He could say, here's Shaul, here's the king. He does it a little differently. He gathered them by their tribes, and the last time, remember that, was in Yehoshua Perek Zion, when he gathered them by their tribes, and by lottery, selected Achan as the one who had, or identified Achan as the one who had stolen from the Cherem. Here, the tribe of Binyamin is the one that is somehow identified, and we don't know how this lottery works, but somehow Binyamin is identified. And so then he took the families of Binyamin. So the family of Matar was picked. And the name Shaul ben Kish came up. They looked for him, they couldn't find him. Velonimtza, of course, in opposition to Perek Tet, Matzah, 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 here, Velonimtza. And just as the donkeys weren't found, Shaul wasn't found. And the reader at this point may say, all right, everything that we thought up till now was just anticipation, it's going to fall through. Why was he not found? By Shalu od Badunai. So they asked God again, meaning they continued this process. Hava od Halom Ish, is there another man? By Omer Adonai, Hinehu Nechbal Akidim, he's hiding over there with the vessels. Meaning, the man we're looking for is here, and he's hiding over there. They ran and they brought him from there. And this again approximates what happened with Achan. In the case of Achan, after Achan was identified, he said where he had hidden the cherem. And the people ran and they brought the cherem back from there. But of course the results are very different. In the case of Achan, that led to his stoning. In this case, it's going to lead to his crowning. And he stood up among the people. And remember I said in the last chapter that when Shaul is described as head and shoulders above the people, we could understand it metaphorically, but here it says he was taller than all the people. He really was a head taller than everyone. And that leads to the result. So Shmuel says, You see the one God has chosen? You know, instead of Shmuel saying privately, okay, God told me this is the one, he brings everybody together and he says, okay, we're ready for a king. Here's the lottery. And, oh, you see the one that God chose. But this tells us something about Shmuel, is that Shmuel somehow senses that physical prowess and physical beauty is an important advantage for a king, which it certainly is. Melech b'yofno techazena. But nonetheless, Shmuel points this out to the people as the most salient feature, and this will be a little bit of Shmuel's undoing in Perek Tet Zayin, as we will see. And he says, you see the one Hashem chose? Ki ein kamo b'cholam, there's none like him. Vayariu cholam vayamru yechi hamelech. And everybody screamed out, and they said, for the first time in Jewish history that we know of, yechi hamelech, long live the king. And now Shmuel repeated what he read in Perek Chet, all the Mishpat HaMelech, all the things the king will have the rights to, hoping again that the people are going to say, all right, that we don't want. And he wrote it down. He wrote it down in a sefer. This is one of the examples in Tanakh of a scroll being written that becomes part of the, shall we say, the library of Am Yisrael. And he put it in front of God. Again, what does in front of God mean? There's no clue. Does it mean there was an altar there? Doesn't mean they brought the Aron there? What does it mean? Vayishalach Shmuel et kol ha'am ish levei tov. He sent everybody home. As if to say, okay, we've identified the king. Now we will do the process of preparing to properly crown him, which means we've had two coronations and neither one of them is a coronation. The one was private on a rooftop or outside of a Ramah. The second one is at Mitzpah, which is the selection of the king and the identification of the king. And now he said, okay, go on home. And then we'll do the next step. Of course, the next step could be a long time. In the meantime, we know that it's going to be 7 days at Gilgal. We're not going to encounter that until later on. V'gan Shaul halach leveto. Shaul also went home. Hagivata vayelchu imo hachayel shenagai Elohim b'libam. And the soldiers who were touched by God, in other words, the soldiers who realized that this was the man, they followed him. Suddenly he had loyalists who went with him, because again, he's basically being chosen as a shofet, as a military leader who's going to lead the people in an uprising against the Plishtim. So the soldiers followed him, but not everybody did. Uvnei v'liyal, the lowlifes, amru ma yoshenu zeh. You think this guy's going to save us? Vayivzuhu, they degraded him. And they did not bring him an offering. So the new king should bring him an offering. And he was silent. He took it. He didn't say anything. And Shaul's going to demonstrate a lot of tolerance for people who abuse him or who disgrace him or who don't honor him properly, which may or may not be a good thing, but then we're going to find later on when David enters the picture that Shaul has the opposite kind of feeling. He suspects everybody of disgracing him and of speaking ill of him, even when they're not, and that also is part of his downfall. In any case, we've completed our study of chapter 10 of Perek Yod, and really Perek Tet and Perek Yod go hand in hand, and it's worthwhile to read them together because it's really all one unit of the selection and identification of Shaul. He's not yet been properly crowned, but we have a very significant short story to deal with in the next parak, which will then make his crowning a real crowning effort. Everyone should have a wonderful day, and in the next podcast, we will pick up with the study of Perek Yud Aleph, Chapter 11. See you around on OU.org and on EtShalom.com.